Welcome to Unfiltered. I'm your host, Sarah Jane Foster. Now, my next guest was in a movie with Snoop Dogg and Keanu Reeves, nominated for a Grammy, and he's on our TVs 5 days a week on one of Ireland's longest running afternoon show. And most importantly, he's from Kerry. Dahi O'Shea, you're very welcome to my podcast.
Finally, I get the invitation to come. I've been watching all these great people, Foster and Allen, Nathan Carter, Terry Prone, waiting. The phone will ring any minute now. So I'd imagine now you were down at the bottom of the list. There was my name. Thanks.
No, you were on top of the list, to be fair. Now, Dahi, you've been in this industry for over 25 years.
Yeah.
So bring me back to the start. I want to get to know how you actually got into this crazy industry.
It's strange, Sarah, in one sense, because I never had any plan or anything to be on TV. If you asked me in my teens, would I be on TV or would I go to the moon first? I'd say, you know, I probably have a better chance of hitching a ride to the moon. It was never my plan. When I was in school, I didn't want to be there. I was asked to leave twice for on different occasions for a week at a time. And I was really, I really found it hard in school. I didn't want to be there, really. And it was at a stage, in one sense, where maybe 5 years before I did my Leaving Cert, Sarah, a lot of people didn't go to college, they immigrated. And maybe 10 years after it, the majority of people went to college. So it was that twilight zone, things were changing. Like, I got 700 points in my Leaving Cert that people will be very kind of shocked to hear, like, you know. But I did it twice. Like, I got 300 the first year and I got 400 the second year.
Did you repeat your Leaving Cert?
I did, yeah.
Oh, did you? Oh,
I repeated my Leaving Cert and I didn't want to.
Why did you repeat then?
Because my mother wanted me to. If I'm being very honest, I did my Leaving Cert in 1994 and I put a lot of work into it. Like, I didn't want to be in school, and then all of a sudden I said, you know, I kind of need to do something because everybody else was doing something.
So, but did you know what you wanted to do then?
I kind of had it in my head to become a teacher at that stage. And so I went off to America in 94, the summer of that, after my Leaving Cert. My brother Danny was in Chicago, so I went over there, and the plan really
was to
stay.
You have an American passport.
I have an American passport all my life, yeah. My parents were married over there in the 60s. My eldest sister and brother were born there.
Right.
So we all became citizens. And so I was there in Chicago in August, got the Leaving Cert results saying, look, Mom, I tried my best, like, and I didn't get the course, so look, I'd probably stay here. So
was that the first or the second?
That was the first time.
Okay.
So the second time, after that, then she said, look, will you think of coming home and repeat your Leaving Cert? I said, I don't really want to repeat my Leaving Cert. Like, I was a doorman in a nightclub in Chicago when I was 18, right, saying, sorry, you're not 21, you can't get in here.
Because you had the height, you were 21.
Yeah, so then I said, okay, I'll come home. So I came back then in the middle of September into class that I didn't really know, in one sense. So I stuck it out for the year, and I was there saying, look, I've got to give it a go again. So I put in a bit of work towards the end. And I got the course in Mary Eye to do a Bachelor of Arts in History in Irish. They were the subjects. So the plan then was to become a teacher. That was it. So then during the summers, I worked on the ferry boats out of the Blasket Islands, which was a great job altogether. And I remember,
so you were like a tour guide?
No, there were smaller boats, so I used to drive one of them, and then I used to collect the money and talk to people as well and have the crack and kind of a Del Boy stuff, you know, that I was apparently good at.
You always had the gift of the gab.
But I was interested in people, like, as well, which was good fun. So, and then I remember I was at the bottom of the pier one day, and one fella said, look, would you be interested in going on the weather on TG Car? And I said, what do you mean going on the weather on TG Car? Oh, to present it, like. I said, what would I be doing? So they said, look, come up and have a look. So I didn't get the HDIP the first year, which you need to become a qualified teacher. So I said, I got a part-time job teaching. So I said, you know what? I'll go up and see what these crowd are on about. So I said, oh, on television. I said, oh, I don't know about that now. So so I came back the following weekend and they put me on television doing these links. So then it took off from there, and I was teaching during the week. And when you start off as a teacher, a lot of young teachers will know, like, you don't make a whole lot of money. So this was a side job. So the side job then turned into a full-time job the following year, Sarah. And I haven't worked since. And that's how it happened. Like, I had no grow to be on TV. I never had any aspirations to be on TV. It wasn't something that I wanted. It wasn't something that I even thought about. So it was strange in that sense.
But was that guy that came up to you, did you know him?
Oh, I knew him, yeah. And then, like, say, I got a call from another lady. She worked in TG Car, and she was, I said, look, we're looking for people to work at the weekend. Would I be interested in doing it?
Yeah.
And I said, sure, listen, we'll have a look at it. And that was it then. And it turned into working most weekends and then during the summer. And then there were full-time jobs at that time. The person left the job. Yeah. So I applied for it and I got it. And it was the same week that I got the H-Dip in Maynooth, and I got the H-Dip in Queens and Belfast as well, all in the same week as the year job in TG Carr that day. But it was like kind of known if you did well in the year that you'd be there for life if you wanted to.
So what, you didn't end up doing the dip then because you got into TV?
I'm not qualified to do anything I'm doing.
That is, yes, you definitely are. You could teach us all.
No, I have no qualifications for TV or teaching anything.
That is so funny. So do you still know that person that asked you?
Oh, I do. Yeah. Sure, I worked with her for years in TG Carr. Yeah, I was in TG Carr 11 years altogether. I was full-time staff there.
But what about the guy that came to you when you were working on the boat?
Yeah, I don't know where he is now, actually.
But like, do you kind of think back him and go, like, if he wasn't there that day, you
could,
might...
Yeah, it could have been totally different.
Do you know the way there's always like somebody there that's like pushing you?
Yeah, the sliding doors kind of thing.
That
could have happened as well. And again, it's just because I wasn't really attracted to being on... I can't even say I wasn't attracted to being on TV because I never even thought about being on it.
So what did he see in you then?
I said, like, so he saw the fella kind of having the crack with people. Like, I had a degree in Irish, so I spoke Irish all my life as well. So that was the other side of it.
Yeah.
And I suppose this fella saw, okay, this fella will be a bit of fun. Like, I was singing, doing a small bit of singing at the time as well. And so I was used to being in front of people. Maybe they saw that. I never really saw it like that.
Yeah.
When you look back at it, it's easy to see. But at the time, I'm just enjoying life. I was 23 years of age when I started on television.
For sure. And then, because your family is huge into music as well. So I'm shocked you didn't get into that.
Yeah, well, my father played music all his life and my brother plays music and I sang a bit, all right, but there was always music at home. But like, I was kind of caught between kind of trad music and Guns N' Roses. Like, I went to Slane in 1992 as a, what age was I? 16, I was probably 15 at the time.
I was 2.
Well, now I feel really old. I like all that. I like kind of fast pace with a good beat. Like, even going back to the earlier Guns N' Roses stuff, it was pure raw. Like, with all the bells and whistles that came in albums after, like, say, Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, like, say, that Appetite for Destruction album, like, it was just pure raw.
Yeah.
It was pure rock and roll. And like, it was very similar when it came to, say, trad music, when you had Seamus Begley and Steve Cooney playing. Like, it was just pure raw emotion. It was just fast. It was hard-hitting.
Yeah.
And that's what I liked.
Okay, so when you started, you didn't go into the music.
Yeah.
You were in TV.
Yeah.
You weren't doing your dip. What was your mom thinking?
My mother said, are you sure about this? And I said, look, I'm just going to give it a go. I can always go back and do the dip some other time.
Yeah.
And that was it. And really, it just went on from there where I was working all year round on The Weather. And then I was on The Weather and Continuity in TG Carr for 11 years altogether. But like, they'd send me off then. I think the first year, I think it was 2002 and 2003. I was doing a summer show called Fail To, which went around to all the festivals. So I was at a different festival every week and the show went out then on a Wednesday. So like, that was really good fun. And then there was other things like the Gradham Cole, that'd be the kind of the big trad music award. So I did the first one in 2001. And I did all these other shows. Then I did the country music show, Glortira, for a good few years. And then in 2006, I did a show for RT called Charity Eurostar.
Yeah.
It was Eurostar, but for people who were well known. This is the irony. I wasn't well known at the time. I was definitely the least well known person in the whole group.
Was Catherine Thomas on
that? Catherine was on that year. Okay. John Aldrich, who played for Ireland, was on that year. McLean Burke from Fair City. Brian Murray and Una Crawford, who were in Fair City as well, they were on it. Roddy Collins was there. Shane O'Donoghue, who's with CNN now. And who else was there? I was there. There was a girl then on Rust from Rust and Roan, Oyna from Rust and Roan.
Right, okay.
And it was funny, really, because I was used to singing kind of trad songs and so on and so forth. Like, the first night I went out, I went singing Sweet Child of Mine from Guns N' Roses. Like,
yeah, you actually showed me photos of that a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
The hair.
So that was good fun. So that was 2006. And then after that, things changed because people kind of really knew, they began to know who I was at that stage. And then the following year, I did the travel series for TG Carr. We did Route 66. We did the Blues Highway. We did kind of Doyle's Honky Tonk Heroes. And then we did the Route 1, which was down the east coast of America.
Oh, wow.
So they were the big ones. And then when we finished the last one of them, I was asked to do The Roads of Tralee. And then a show called The Daily Show came along with RTE. I was asked when I presented with Claire Byrne. So the two was presenting it. So that was 2010. And I left TG Carr then.
Wow.
To pursue that again, it was probably a kind of a crazy thing to do in one sense, because 2010 the economy was bad, We were in a big, huge recession, and I was leaving a full-time job. So that's.
So sorry, you were leaving.
I left TG Carr that time, yeah.
For
RTE to take up a job that was there for a year.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so it was kind of, well, I won't say it was stupid, but it was kind of crazy looking back.
Yeah.
Like the ignorance is bliss was totally kind of coming at me there. Didn't realize what, because it could have not come back the following year. Now we were lucky that the Daily Show came back the second year, and then that turned into the Today Show that moved to Cork that we're here 12 years later. So in one sense, I was lucky that it worked out the way it did.
And what made you go for it then? What gave you drive?
I don't know, because I'd always be a person who would be kind of, a bit of security was always important to me, because like I had a mortgage. I'd only had a mortgage taken out about 2 or 3 years at that stage. So there was a good 20, 30 years coming.
Yeah.
That had to be paid. We were in the middle of a recession. So I suppose somewhere deep down, Sarah, maybe I believed in myself that I could do something different.
Yeah.
I had a lot of the stuff from TG Carr done at that stage. But it wasn't even that, because I liked doing those shows well. The Glory Tears, that was just a great show to be involved in. That's still going.
Yeah, I know.
Which is always good fun. And
which was the best crack?
I suppose the American shows were great. The American, like one day you're out talking to somebody on the side of the street, and then you're not, the second day you're inside in Burt Reynolds' kitchen having tea with him doing an interview.
Yeah.
So that type of stuff. So the variety of it was great. But what worked well for me was that I was left out during the summer. I was like cattle. I was in the shed for the winter, right? And then I was left out into the field for the summer. And of course, like any young calf, went for the electric fence straight away when I came out of the shed. So that I liked that dynamic where I was in for the winter, and then say around April, May, I'd say, okay, I need to start moving. So then they'd send me out for a bit of the summer and holidays, and then I'd come back in for September. So I liked that as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. But who, I'm dying to know, like who was around you that was telling you like, yeah, go for it. Like this is... So how did you have the confidence to just keep going?
I don't know. It's maybe there was a bit of naivety there. Maybe there was this... Like, I enjoyed what I was doing and...
Were you getting a buzz from it?
I was getting a buzz from it and I was enjoying it. And I think that's always a good barometer. Now, that won't work out all the time. That's the other side of it. Like, so sometimes you'd be having a great buzz from something and it just mightn't be working out, or it mightn't work out for you. But sometimes you just have to go with things in life, because if everything's so structured... You just keep going round the roundabout all the time. Whereas you need to kind of, you need to back yourself too. Like anyone watching and listening to this now, Sarah, and they might be at this whole crossroads in your life if you want. Will I or won't I? Do you know what? Go for it, like. Because like say, I always say like, there are two types of pain in this world, right?
I know what you're going to say.
What?
The pain of regret.
No, discipline first.
Okay.
The pain of discipline and the pain of regret.
Okay.
They're the two types of pain you have. Do you know what I mean? So if you're disciplined enough to stick with what you believe in, okay? As in to go for something, to go for a goal, to have it. And to have the discipline to not turn around and say, okay, I'm giving up. But to have the discipline to go, okay, I'm going to go with this and go for it. Then you can turn around and say, do you know what? I tried it. It didn't work out. Big deal. We're going to try again.
I love that though.
But like I said, there's nothing worse than the pain of regret where you're going, crap.
Has there ever been anything in your career where you were like, I really regret doing that or not doing that?
No, I think I've been lucky enough. But I was lucky enough, people took a chance on me. You know, that like say, you could be the most whatever in the world, but unless somebody believes in you, unless you have a small bit of luck, Sarah, no matter what you're doing, you need that in life.
Okay.
Whether it's an All-Ireland football final, if you're playing one of them, you could be the best team in the world, but if you don't have a small bit of luck, you mightn't win it. And you have to look at it like that.
And who was your first kind of mentor then in this business?
I don't know if I don't think I had a mentor.
Did you not?
Like, there was a lot of freewheeling with it. And, do you know, sometimes, like, the more you tell people, the more you give your power away.
What do you mean?
Say, for example, I wouldn't tell everybody, I wouldn't tell many people lots of things about how I do things, if you know what I mean.
Because, how you do things.
Yeah, because you're giving your power away. Like, there's a reason why people have me on the afternoon show, because I am who I am, like. But if I share some of that with lots of other people, sure. They'll be trying to steal my position, maybe, you know?
Yeah, but that's really interesting that you're saying that. But I'm like, you are who you are.
Yeah.
And then they've obviously gotten you for you.
Yeah, but you have to believe that too. Yeah, but I still think by keeping things to yourself, like you're keeping part of, it's not even the mystique, but it's part of your power of who you are, like, you know? Because there's the public persona and then who you are as a private person as well. Like there's, like say, my principles and values, like I wouldn't share them with everybody. Because I think they're private, but that's what kind of keeps me grounded and centered, if you like.
Yeah, I never would have thought you were a very, I know we all can be very private, but I never would have thought you were a private person or even considered yourself that.
Would you look at me now and say I'm a person who prays every night?
No.
Yeah, see, I do though.
Okay.
Yeah. Why? Because, well, so people pray for different reasons. People pray because they think it'll get them into heaven, right?
Why do you pray?
Because it makes me feel good at that moment in time. In that moment in time where I say my prayers before I go to sleep.
Have you always done that as a child?
I've always done that since, I'd say, maybe even since my communion, since I was 7 or 8. And I've done it ever since for the last 40 years.
And do you pray for other people?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I would. And if I was going past a church, I'd light candles for people.
Okay.
Somebody wrote a very nasty letter to me one time, and I was in the church the following day, and I lit a candle to that person too.
That's really good. I'm actually shocked. I genuinely wasn't expecting you to say that at all. But I've so much respect for you to like doing that.
Yeah, and it's not for everyone. It's not for everyone. People might say that's a load of hoo ha, and that's fine. That's their perspective.
Do you go to mass?
I was at mass Easter Sunday. I hadn't been to mass for a while. I wouldn't be there every Sunday. I might go a few times a year, but I do like going in there. I like going to mass when I'm in there. I enjoy it when I'm in there. I don't believe everything the priest says.
Okay.
I pick some of it and I take what I like and I carry that with me. No more than watching a TV show. You're not going to take the whole TV show home with you, but you're going to take pieces of that home with you too, and it's very similar to that. And it's about being here now and about feeling good now, and about we're here in this moment in time. We can't change what's happened. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. But I'm here talking to you now, and I came here with the idea of I'm going to have a great fun here, and that's what we're having. I'm not worrying about what I'm doing in an hour's time. I'm not worried about did I leave the immersion on in the house. I'm here now, so here I am. Do you know what I mean? And that's the way I look at it.
I really appreciate you saying that. And when you're saying it, I'm there going, I feel like, especially within this industry, that's something that you have to learn. So is that something that you've learned only recently?
No, I don't think you can learn it. I think it comes to you more so than you learn it. I think if you go out trying to learn that, you're thinking about learning it, which doesn't have you here in the now. Whereas if you're just kind of having the chat and where you go, like, you know.
No, but what I'm saying is about being in the moment and being present. Yeah. Because especially like with social media and stuff like that, it's really difficult. I personally don't find it difficult. Yeah. I would consciously be present of things I'm doing.
Yeah.
Equally, I have my days and my moments where I'm just like I'm meeting myself coming back.
Yeah. I don't know if you can learn it, but I think it takes time, and I suppose it's more experience than anything else, and just being comfortable within yourself. I don't think there's a textbook you can read to say, okay, oh, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
I think it comes to you naturally, just being in the moment. And I know, say, people will be listening to this, watch, oh, look at these two talk about being in the moment and everything. But I think in the world we live in, as you say, with social media and everything, before we didn't have to do that because there weren't as many distractions. Now we do have to go, hang on a second, stop here. Okay, here we are. There's a bit of that involved.
But did you always do that though? That's what I'm saying.
I didn't do it because we didn't have to do it. Because the social media wasn't there. We didn't have all these other outside influences kind of pulling at you. Whereas we do in life now. Do you know what I mean?
Like, so what would you say is pulling at you now that you're kind of like, okay, I need to just focus and say I'm in the
moment? I could be thinking now of all the stuff I have to do this evening because I have a list. I started this list, right?
Yeah.
Which are great because even last night...
Love a list.
Landed home last night. So on the list was... all the different things to do. But I can go away to sleep then after that because it's all in the list.
Yeah, it's out of your head.
That's it. It's out of my head. It's on the paper. So back to your question. So if I wasn't in the moment, I'd be thinking, okay, when I go home, driving home here now, I'll stop in that lawn for a coffee in McDonald's and have another hour from there. And then I'll sit in. And then whereas opposed to, that's all done now. I know what's going to happen later. I'm not worried about it. But like I even do things that say if I do something that's not on the list, right? I'll write it into the list and cross it off. Like, yeah, I know. Just to make myself feel good about the whole thing, you know.
That's so, a real thing, though. Yeah, like, it gets like, the endorphins going of like feeling like you're actually like after completing something.
Yeah, I like. Yeah, that's why it makes me feel good.
So it's just a bit mad reflecting on your career so far, how much it has just snowballed onto the next job and onto the next job. Like, there doesn't seem to have been any gap at all.
No, there hasn't been so far. I've been lucky. Like, say, even with the Today Show, like. Like, we've been very, very lucky with that. Like, we started that in 2012, and we were doing 80 shows a year, and the show was 50 minutes. And now we do 166 shows a year, and
166.
2.25 hours, that's what's in every show. So it's a lot of TV, And there are rumours that it might be going all on through the summer next year. Not this one, but the following year. So we'll have Yeah, so we'll have to see what will come of those rumours at the moment. So, but no, I've been very, very lucky, like say, to have a show like that. And
I want to know when you realised that you were actually famous. Was there a point that you were like...
Ah, you know, geez, you can't be around thinking you're that like...
No, yeah, I know you're going to say that because you're there going, Jesus. You're in Ireland and what people are saying. But there had to have been a time when you were like, peaches.
If I went back to West Kerry now thinking that I was anything more than my mother's son, no, I'll tell you what, they'd bait me out of the place with a 3/4-inch weapon pipe.
They wouldn't let you in.
Not at all. Well, I know what you're asking, but yeah. I don't know. Like, it's not something that I really think about. And like, even my Ogie came home one evening from school. He said, "Dad, are you famous?" I said, "Well, what does that mean?" He said, "Well, do people know who you are?" I said, "Yeah, people know who I am." But I said, "What's the most important thing?" He said, "That you're my dad." And I said, "Exactly."
Oh, that's so nice.
That's it. Yeah.
That's so lovely.
So, but like even the place where I'd have a few pints and all that, like I said, they don't care whether I'm on TV or fixing them. It doesn't matter to them at all. Like, but you have people coming up to you. It's always very, very nice people coming up and saying hello. Like, particularly older people in one sense after COVID, because we were, I suppose, one of the only connections people had at the time.
Yeah.
Because we were on all the time during COVID.
Yeah.
And after it as well. And to see older people, I'd always have a few, probably shouldn't say this now. I'd always have a few Today Show mugs in the boot of the car. For older people, when I meet them at gas stations and so on and so forth.
Okay.
Yeah.
But do you know what I'm going to ask you for now?
What?
To get out to the boot of the car and get me a Today Show mug.
There's a Today Show mug there, yes.
Is there?
I'll bring one in for you.
Okay, well, I'll get you an unfiltered mug. I don't have one now, but I definitely want one of those.
This episode is brought to you by glassonline.ie. They are an Irish-owned company based in Mullingar, County Westmeath. They supply high-quality glass, mirror, polycarbonate plastic sheeting and accessories. They supply made-to-measure toughened glass suitable for tabletops for both indoor and outdoor furniture. And they supply glass shelving too. They're available for delivery across various parts of Ireland. Visit glassonline.ie for more information.
So, Di, social media wasn't there when you started. So do you find it a bit strange now that it's such a thing?
Yeah, in one sense, I'm happy it wasn't there when we started.
Why?
When we were a lot younger. So, because there's no evidence around the place.
Yeah, exactly.
But in one sense, it was easier, I suppose.
Yeah.
But then it was harder to promote yourself if you were trying to get noticed and so on and so forth. So there's that side of it. Where now you can go on social media and do some crazy things and people know who you are and use that as a base for what you want to go on if you want to. But I always found that I think the longer it takes to get towards the top in your career on TV or radio, the longer you will stay up there, as opposed to somebody who will shoot straight up, they're going to come straight down in a short period of time. Like, to be fair, I was on TV, I'd say 7 years, right? On TV, 7 years before people really began to notice who I was. Like, I don't think you can go into it saying, okay, 7 years' time now, people are going to know who I am. I'm going to make a big impact. I think just by being yourself will carry you there and take the time part out of it. Enjoy what you're doing. That's what I'd say to people. And once you're enjoying what you're doing, like I said, the whole famous thing is like it's bizarre because everybody wants to be famous.
Now they do.
In one sense, yeah. It's like, particularly teenager, you're going, okay, you want to be famous.
Yeah.
But what for? Oh, I just want to be famous. No, you have to be famous for something, like.
Yeah.
Or you have to be, take away the word famous, but in known. What are you known for, like, you know?
Yeah,
and say if you're known for something. Like, the famous is kind of just a fancy word for being known.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. And like a popularity thing.
Yeah, there's a thing. And like, say, I think that feeds people's ego. And then you get to a stage where your ego is kind of, you don't care about the ego anymore, like, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a good place to be. But it takes a long time to get there, I think.
What, to get rid of the big ego?
I think everyone has an ego.
Yeah, of course.
Like, say, but I think your ego goes away as you continue, when you don't really care what people say about you. And like, an ego is a good thing because it keeps you grounded and it keeps you from resting on your laurels that you want to keep going. Like,
yeah.
So an ego can be used like that because I think people think of the word ego now as having a big head. You're full of crap, like, you know. But there's more to an ego than that, like, because everyone has a bit of an ego in some way, like, and an ego kind of can feed into your principles as well and your values, like, you know. say, if my values were pushed, now that would be my ego kind of being hurt more than my big head. Me having a big head, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah, the ego is such a, an interesting...
It is, like, yeah, but it's kind of seen as a negative thing for lots of people, but that there's a positive there as well, because it keeps you going as well, and it keeps you grounded, and it keeps you to your beliefs, I think.
Okay.
Now, the problem with having a big ego is that you believe you're better than you are. So
we don't need that.
No, certainly don't need that, like, yeah.
Do you know what I always find with you, Di, is no matter... I don't know, like, when you walk into a room... Mm. People just naturally gravitate towards you. Like, whether it's man, woman, or child. Yeah. Like, I've literally been around you with my granny, my parents, my brother, my nephew, and they all just love you.
Ah, well, that's very kind.
Yeah, no, but, like, genuinely, like, when I've worked with you in the past, I've seen you in action with people, and people just, I don't know, they just gravitate towards you. Well, why do you think that is?
I think I'm in people's sitting rooms 5 evenings a week for 2.25 hours for the last 12 years. For the majority of the year, I think there's part of that. Also, like, I enjoy people. I like talking to people. I like having a crack with people. I'm myself on TV, I suppose. And you might be able to answer this. I don't think there's much of a difference between me on TV and me out having a pint in the pub.
No, there's definitely not.
And I think people kind of like that. I think there's definitely the Kerry thing. Kind of stands to us as well, I think, a lot.
What do you mean, the Kerry thing?
People like
what
Kerry
do you
people.
Mean?
Do you know what I mean?
Right, okay.
But like, so there's the whole cute whoreism Kerry lad person thing that I think people like as well. I think it's people like it all around the country because we are who we are as well. Like, there's a bit of that in it.
Yeah.
And people like going to Kerry. They associate going to Kerry with Kerry people.
I know what you mean.
So I think maybe some of that, but...
You have this, like, soundness about you.
Yeah.
So Tadhg Fleming then, and
Tadhg Fleming is a gas man as well. He was on with us during the week, and certainly his dad Derry, like, and sure, like, you'd hang out with those two lads all day long because, you know, they're full of crack, they're full of blagarding. Everybody's in good form. Like, the two lads, when they walk into the room, you'll start smiling automatically.
Okay.
And I like those people because there's just a happy disposition from them.
So they were on the Today Show this week. So tell me, like, that show was going a very long time, Jahi, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah. So, as I say, we started with 80 shows a year at 50 minutes, and now it's 166 every year. So, yeah, we... In the beginning, I suppose, the show was a bit more serious than what it was now. And... We decided to change because you have an hour of news on after us, more than hour. You have the North and then you have the 6-1. And they do what they do, and they do what they do very well. So I was making the point, I said, why do we have to be so serious? Like, we don't have to be.
Yeah.
And then COVID came along, and we saw ourselves as this warm blanket that you put around, a comfort blanket. So we were staying away from all kinds of serious news stories and...
Yeah, you kind of have to have the balance.
And so on and so forth, yeah. So we injected a lot of fun and positivity into the show, and that turned the show around.
Wow.
It, like I say, people kind of come in all just for a bit of fun, a bit of a laugh. You don't know what's going to happen. And that's part of the secret, Sarah. And that's why I think the show has done so well. Like, I think there was a show on years ago, even before my time in prehistoric years, called Live at 3, and I think that was there around... 10 years, and we were about 12 going into 13, so we'll be the longest running afternoon show on RTE. I think we are actually at the moment.
Yeah, I really like this show, I have to say. I think at this point it's worth saying, you basically do like 5 late-late shows a week then.
Yeah, 5 late-late shows a week, that's what
that's
we do.
That's full on.
It's full on, but it's easy. Again, like, we sit in and away we go, and there are days you're going, are we rehearsing this or is this live? And then you look at the clock, oh geez, this is live. And you go, I love this stuff. Because, like, we do it every day. This is the thing. Like, so it's like a teacher going in front of a class. It's like it's like sitting in driving the car. All of a sudden you're going, geez, there's a clutch here. And then 3 months later you're driving without even... That's what it's like, driving a car.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, and then certain different people get into the car and get out of the car. Then someone says, what are you doing here?
So what about any pre-show rituals then?
No, I have a few pre-show rituals from the Rose of Tralee, all right.
Oh, do you?
It's how I get dressed, yeah.
It's weird. Go on.
So it starts with, I don't take a shower that evening. I take a shower in the morning because I found 1 year where I took a shower. We're on the show at 8 o'clock and I took the shower at 6:30 and my body got really warm.
Oh.
Because of the hot water, obviously. And then my body stayed warm. So I was roasting for the first half of the show. So I said, there you have it. Lesson learned. Don't ever do that again. But I always go to sleep before the Rose of Tralee between 6 and 7. So I wake up at 7 and we're on at 8 o'clock. I'll always go to sleep for 40 minutes or an hour.
Sorry, you'd be asleep before you go on air?
Yeah. Well, I wake up at 7, so I have a full hour to get ready. Like,
I don't know why I'm so shocked with that.
Oh, it's great. It's brilliant. Lovely power nap. And then, so I'll get dressed, okay? Boxer shorts, short dicky bow, socks, pants, jacket.
Oh my good God. Yeah. Do you not be paranoid though that you'll sleep in it? Like, oh no, sure, you'll have somebody there knocking at your door. Can't go on without you.
Well, there you have it. Like, yeah, so. But yeah, that's one of the rituals I have. Like, yeah.
Oh, I love that you do that.
The first time I hosted the Roses Tree, that's the way I got dressed. And I thought it worked well the first time, so I said I'd keep it going.
All right, like
So anything like that, any kind of look thing that I think might bring me luck, I'll chance it, like, you know.
So you'll just keep doing it. So what if you didn't do it that way?
I don't know. I haven't done it any other way.
And how long are you doing the Roses Tree then?
14 years.
14 years? Like, you are Mr. Rose of Tralee.
Well, kind of. See, the thing about it, like, say, I'm only the host, of course. I have Catherine with me now since last year. Yeah. But it's not about the host. It's about the roses themselves. So that's what's enjoyable about the Rose of Tralee. That takes pressure off me because it's about them. It's about their families. It's about their communities here in Ireland or their Irish communities in America or England or Australia or wherever. And that's the way I go into it. Like, I'm the least important person there.
I know what you're saying, and I'm sure any of the Roses watching that will definitely appreciate you saying that and that you're making it about them.
Yeah.
But I think when you're presenting it, you just know that it's in safe hands and you know the show inside out.
Yeah, that's certainly, like, because I can tell you this how it works. Monday night, 3 Roses break, 3 Roses news, okay? 4 Roses break, 4 Roses break. Music, 4 Roses, we'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Tuesday night is 3 Roses break, 3 Roses news. 4 Roses break, 4 Roses break, 4 Roses. Band, winner. Winner of the Roses, go around the house. Winner of the Roses, Tralee, see you next year. So that's the kind of, that's how it's broken up in my head.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you find, like, is it pretty wild down? I've actually never been, but is it wild down in Tralee?
It's wild for everyone, bar me, because I'm trying to mind myself, like, there's parties happening night and day. My focus is on Monday and Tuesday on TV. But believe me, the singer isn't in the second chorus of the Rose of Tralee and I'm gone bolted for the bar.
Are you?
But I mightn't have drank for about 2 months before that.
Yeah.
Like, I always go on this kind of strict kind of get fit, eat properly, no drinking diet for about 2 months. So, like, I'm down there, like, I'm ready to go, like.
Well, you're raring to go.
But at 11:30 on Tuesday night, I'm raring to go out. Then after that, like, so stand back, you better be ready, like.
I can imagine.
Order a Malta for the following morning, trying to get me off the pitch, like, you know.
But, like, it's only on once a year, right? So is that why you have so much love for it?
It is, like, there's a few things, like, because, like, we grew up in it all along. Like, we're about an hour west of Tralee, where we are in West Kerry. So there was, we always followed the Rose of Tralee. We went to Tralee twice a year when we were younger shopping. So you got a pair of pants to go and runners to go back to school in September, which was the time of the Rose of Tralee. So we always went in at the end of August, and did the same thing at Christmas.
Yeah.
So they were our big days out when we were growing up. So we were always in and around the Rose of Tralee, even growing up. And then, like, I'd hosted the Kerry Rose selection over 20 years ago, so I was with them for a good while.
Did you? Yeah. So you were very, like, heavily involved
and
before.
And then I was on the regional judging panel in 2005 and 6. And then I was on the international panel, judging panel on 07.
Wow.
No, 08. And then 09.
08?
Yeah.
Do you want to know a fun fact?
What?
I actually went for the Rose of Tralee in 08.
Did you?
Yeah, I didn't get it.
Jesus.
Die. Brendan McCardell, is that his name?
Yeah.
Who is he? Get on to him. Ring him there.
I need to have more than him.
Yeah, I know. And he was like, I sang The Rose of Allendale.
Oh, The Rose of Allendale.
Yeah, exactly. So I sang that and...
2008, that's the same year as Rita went for it.
No way.
Yeah, she was in it 2008. Yeah.
Was she?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
New Jersey Rose,
yeah. Oh. So I was on the judging panel that year.
Stop it.
Yeah, and then I was the chairperson of the judging panel the following year.
You weren't the presenter?
No, not
when you met Rita.
No, I was on the judging panel.
Oh.
So could you imagine that conversation with her parents when she didn't get it?
So what did you say? I think she's a great one.
I said I was looking at the bigger picture, like, you know.
You were like, put her through, she is brilliant.
So Jesus. So yeah, so that was it. So I wasn't hosting that year. I didn't take over the hosting until the 2010.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Sorry, who was the host then before
Ray
you?
Ray Darcy. Ray was there for about 5 years before me.
Yeah.
Tuberty was there for about 2 years before him. Marty Whelan was there for about 6 years.
Wow.
Derek Davis did 1 or 2 years when Gay Byrne was sick.
Yeah.
And Gay was there for around 15 or 16 to 17 years or something.
So when you were on the panel then, did you ever think, just I'll actually be...
No. Oh, no. Again, like...
Like, you're a really lucky person then.
I'm not trying to say I had no aspiration to go to do anything, but these jobs just fell into my lap. If like say,
right.
I didn't go after say, okay, I want to be the host of the Rose of Tralee.
Okay.
It just happened.
So you weren't manifesting this?
No, not at all. But I was having great crack being on the judging panels and everything.
Okay.
And like say, I was on TG Carr at the time, and as a judge, you're going to be shown on TV, if you like. So I saw the benefit in that.
Yeah.
But I also believed in it as well, like, because it's a big thing for Tralee, it's a big thing for Kerry, it's a big thing for Munster, a big thing for Ireland internationally, like. So I believed in all that part of it. So then when I became the host in 2010, I followed on with that and kept going with it because I saw the importance of it, like, you know.
Okay, and what would you say then? I feel like sometimes the Rose of Tralee is misunderstood,
yeah.
And then it gets a lot of criticism then. What would you say to people then that do criticise it?
Well, see, certain people go to criticise things anyway, so there's no problem. Off you go. I've no problem. Everybody has their own opinion. I'm not trying to persuade anyone to follow the Rose of Tralee or anything, but I can tell you what the Rose of Tralee means to me. The Rose of Tralee means to me it's a celebration of Irishness, but it's also it's a celebration of Irish women. So when is a celebration of Irish women out of date? Never.
Okay.
So that's where I come from.
Fair enough. That's a really good point.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I believe in. It's a celebration of Irish women. It has always been a celebration of Irish women. And if, like, say, people say that the Rose of Tralee isn't forward-looking, hang on a second, go back to the 1980s. The majority of the Roses would have been maybe teachers, Gardaí, they were called Ban Gardaí at that time, air hostesses, or something that would be seen that time as a female role. Now, what have we got? We have doctors, we have occupational therapists, we have engineers, we have everything.
Yeah.
So it's a pure sign of that the Rose of Tralee has moved forward.
Trans women are allowed in.
100%, yeah. Yeah.
You're allowed to have babies.
You're allowed to have babies, you're allowed to be married. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Now, those rules have changed during the years with the times.
So it does represent Ireland as it is now.
I certainly think it does anyway. You know, not everybody, it's not for everybody. It is for loads of other people. There's a 51% share of people watching it last year on the Tuesday night.
Yeah.
So, and again, if it's something you're not into, that's no problem at all.
I do think anyone that is criticising the Rose of Tralee don't fully understand the Rose of Tralee.
Yeah, there can be a bit of that. Yeah. And that's fine too.
Yeah, it is fine.
That's fine too. And yeah.
And the Rose of Tralee last year was our very own Rachel Duffy.
She was, yeah, 100%. Like, you had a great year. You won the Talton Cup, you had the flag hole, and you had Rachel Duffy.
We were so lucky.
Yeah, you were pox lucky.
We really were. I have to say, for me, Rachel really got me into the Rose of Tralee.
Yeah.
I just think she's such a fabulous person, and she carried herself so well throughout the entire competition.
Yeah, she was absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Like, and again, somebody who genuinely didn't expect to actually be crowned the Rose of Tralee that night.
Yeah.
Like, I remember she was on stage and, like, she spoke about her mom and she spoke about her family, the importance of family, and just being her.
Yeah.
And we were talking earlier on about being in the moment, and that was definitely one of these times where somebody was on stage and she was just in the moment.
Wow.
And I think she felt that, you know, this is about her family, it's about her community here in Westmeath, and it's about people, you know, who lose people in life, and you can move and you can get on with your life. It doesn't have to stop you in your tracks.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that anything has changed, that okay, this has happened, but we have the strength inside us to move on. And I think that's one of the strong points that Rachel had for the whole year.
Yeah, she really did. And are you able to, like, did you know Rachel was going to win, as in, like...
No, like, say, for example, I do all the interviews, and then at the end you go around, I say something about all of them.
Okay.
And it's at that point when I open up the envelope, that's when it is.
Yeah.
The only thing I'll ask is that the producer gives the name in my ear as well, just to make sure that what he's saying is the same thing that's written in front of me.
Yeah, it's matching up.
Yeah.
But do you, I know obviously you don't know because you're not, like, judging or you're not the one putting the name on the, or in the envelope.
Mm.
But do you know inside, though? Like, are you there going, oh, yeah, she's a good chance? Oh, really?
No, not like, when I was a judge, you, like say, when you're a judge, you're not looking for faults in any of them, but you're looking for, you're actually looking for the opposite. You're looking for things that stand out. So that's when you're in the judging role, because that's your job. Like, my main job as the host is to make sure that the Rose is happy going on stage, is happy up there, and comes off saying, I want to go back up there again. Once that's achieved, that's my main concern. But when the winner is announced, and then you're looking at it the following day, you can say, oh, I can actually see why this person was picked. But at the time, you're in a totally different mindset because you want them to do well. Like, you really want them, you want every one of them to do well and to be in a happy place, because it's so easy to get criticized for anything you do these days.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things about the Rose of Tralee and every one of those women that go on stage and that people don't speak about. Like, they go up there, they put themselves out there, like, as in, there's no hiding place up on that stage, and they give it their all, like, you know. And I don't think many people think of the courage it takes to actually do that in front of 2,000 people in the audience and up to 700,000 or 800,000 people at home.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And the strength to be able to do that. To do it, as we spoke about, having social media there now as well. And straight away, you could be telling a story about losing somebody. Oh my God, I hate her dress.
I know.
And that's the comment about it. You go, oh my God, you're not even listening to this person, like, you know.
Yeah.
But, and they're strong enough to know that that's could be coming their way, and they still go and do it. And they show a tremendous amount of strength that I don't think we talk about enough, really. It's a, like I say, we all get judged in different ways now, but to actually put yourself forward into something that you are being judged.
Yeah.
I think it takes a lot of character to do that as well. Particularly these days. I think it's really, it's a tough thing to do. And they do it, but they don't think like that. They go there to I suppose, celebrate their life.
Yeah.
And what they've achieved up until then. Like, I'd be up on stage going, geez, I've actually nothing achieved. Like, I remember being on stage when I had one or two rows going, holy shit, I've nothing achieved in my life at all. As this 23-year-old rattled off all the things that she'd done. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm only a TV presenter. So that's the way I look at it as well. Like, so.
Yeah, for sure.
But we're here, we're both up there, we're both enjoying it. That's the main thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But image is such a thing these days, regarding with social media.
Yeah.
People always comment on how you look. It's one of the first things. How important is image to you?
Well, I suppose when you work on TV, that's the first thing they see.
Yeah.
And it's part of who you are and who you become. I was never really too bothered about what people said about me, my appearance or anything. But one thing that I wanted to do, and I sorted out last year, was I got a hair restoration in the front.
It looks great.
Yeah, it looks fantastic.
It looks
lovely. And it's something that I'd been thinking about for a while. But I never thought of not doing it because people might think it's strange or oh, what's your man doing kind of thing. This is something that I wanted to do, and I said, I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
So I went down to the CHRC in the Bonds in Tralee, and I had a consultation down there. I heard about this new machine they had. It's an AI machine that actually takes the hair. It's a robot that takes the hair from the back of your head. So you don't feel anything.
Right.
And they numb the head and the back when they're taking it out, and you're just there. It's like something tapping the back of your head, and they're actually taking out.
So
all
there's no pain.
Didn't feel a thing. Yeah.
Wow.
So then that's the first part of the day. Then they flip you around, and then they put all the hairs into the front of your head. Like, yeah, because like I was really there was nothing there.
Okay.
And it was very very thin on top.
Yeah.
So then a year last Christmas, I decided to go and do it. Teamed up with the gang down there. There's a Dr. Mohammed down there. He's a hair restoration specialist, but he's also a magician. So I went for it. It was one of the best things I've ever done in my life.
It looks really good, but it's really discreet. Like, I probably wouldn't have known you got it done, only that you actually said it, that you got it done.
Yeah, and that's the process they have there as well. Like say, I show people some of the things, they say, oh, did it hurt? Not one bit.
Okay.
It's like you just get a little pick to numb your head, and that's it. You don't feel anything else. So like I was back at work 2.5 weeks after having it done. People said, geez, you have a very short haircut.
Oh, right. Okay, so you came back on TV. So how long was that period?
2.5 weeks during the Christmas break, about a year last Christmas. And then it grew. And then you really noticed the difference, I suppose, maybe around 8 months later, 8 or 9 months later. Like, and it just gets better from there on as well. Like.
So wait now, the hair actually grows as normal?
You put the hair in, okay?
Right.
So the hair itself falls out. The ones that I put in, the hair falls out, but the follicle stays in. So they take the hair and the follicle out of the back,
okay,
and they put it in the front. So
right.
The follicle then is embedded. So for the first two or three days, you have to spray it every half an hour just to make sure it's nice and wet. Now you can't wash your hair or anything.
Spray it
with water, yeah, just to make sure. I suppose if you're putting plants into the garden,
I suppose
you'd have to put water on it. So then after a few weeks, then the hairs actually fall off, right? But the follicle is still inside.
Oh.
It's the follicle that grows back out again.
That's mad.
Yeah, it's brilliant though. Yeah.
So, and that just keeps, so you can get your hair cut?
Okay, 100%. It'll keep growing forever then. That's it.
That's mental.
Yeah. But I didn't know that. Like, I'm 47 years of age. Like, I know lads in their 20s
right.
who have serious kind of self-esteem issues because they're losing their hair and they don't want to go out. They don't want to meet people.
Yeah.
And there's an embarrassment about it. And like, say, I know, like, the amount of people that get on to me when the story got out that I got my hair restoration done, they were saying, oh my God, like, I can't believe this. Great to have somebody talking about it, to have a man talking about it. And I never kind of looked at it like that, thinking, okay, maybe this is bigger than what I thought it was. Like, I said, look, women get stuff done to their hair all the time. No one takes any notice of it at all.
Yeah.
I know some women who have had the hair restoration. There's also a thing called the PRP where they take some of your blood out. They spin the blood around and there's plasma there as well. And they put that into your head as well to make it grow more.
So the vampire facial.
That vampire facial on the head. Like, yeah.
If it's good enough for Kim Kardashian, it's good enough for Dottie.
There you have it. So, the amount of younger people who were really, really bothered about it surprised me. I didn't realise that people suffered so much about it.
I have to say, when I seen you putting this up on your Instagram, I was like, first of all, I wouldn't have noticed that you got it done, which I think is a really good thing because you can see, like, there's horrendous jobs out there, but yours was really discreet and done really, really well.
Yeah.
But I also thought as well, when you did put it up on your Instagram, I knew straight away that younger men would be delighted that you did to normalize it.
Yeah, we have to normalize these things.
Yeah.
There's no point of suffering in silence when you can do something about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the fact then as well that, say, I was going down home to Tralee as well to have it done down there was great as well. Like, you know, but like, I landed down to the CHRC in the Bonds in Tralee at 8:30 on a Friday morning, and I was back in Galway for, I'd say, 5:45 that evening.
Ah, stop. So you're literally in and out in one day.
In and out in one day, like,
That's brilliant. Yeah, and then back to work 2 weeks later.
2.5 weeks later, and then, like I said, they call you every day just to make sure everything's okay, and it's so easy to do now. It's, say, you just take a load of pictures and WhatsApp the pictures to them.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you have to shave your hair first before you go down?
Yeah, you can shave the hair. That was an interest. I never had my hair shaved before.
Did you not? Yeah. You always had really long hair.
Yeah, I had long hair when I was younger, Sarah, when I was a lot younger. When I thought I was a member of Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, for sure. Sure, I know you showed me all the photos of that hair and I loved it. But I have to say, I really genuinely believe that younger men are definitely going to really appreciate you speaking out about it.
Yeah.
You're so confident in yourself. So I think it definitely... Well, no, you definitely are. But it definitely takes somebody like you in the public eye, I think, to just make it acceptable for other people that it's just like, I'm getting my hair done. Same way as women. Yeah, I'm just getting my hair done. Yeah. It's not a big deal.
I don't think I'd even one negative comment about it.
Okay.
And what I had was lots of people saying, fair play for talking about it. This really gets me down. And also sisters and moms getting in contact with me talking about their brothers and sons.
Okay, getting them vouchers.
That they noticed that this was bothering them.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. As in, talk about it. That's what the whole thing is about. You're normalising something, that if there's something there, if there's something you can do to make yourself feel better, do it. Like.
Oh, no, I'm all for that. Yeah, genuinely, I am. Yeah. Why would you care about what other people are thinking?
Well, believe me, what other people say think about me is none of my business.
Okay. Have you always embodied that attitude then?
Well, I suppose when you start on TV in the beginning, you're a bit interested in why are other people interested in me, but that's part of it. And then you get to a stage where I bet everything's said about me at this stage, so...
That's just how you take it on board. You're just very blasé about it.
But I suppose there are other people. I said there are. Say if you're having a bad day, then as well, it can kind of be a burden on you, not just a bit of a weight on your shoulders.
Yeah.
But you get out of it then as well. Like, you have to, reality is a great thing. Like.
Yeah.
Reality and what's in your head are two different things a lot of the time. Like, you know.
No, I totally agree.
Yeah, and you just have to realize. Hang on a second here. This is the reality of it. Like, I think people can think they can say anything about anyone now because. Yeah. They wouldn't say it to your face or anything. And there are lots of people who have been hurt all their lives. And all of a sudden they're being hurt. And that's one of the reasons why they say things.
Yeah.
But there are two sides of it. Like, there's what they say is one thing. It might be wrong.
Yeah.
But there's also how you take it and how you take it on board. Like, you can kind of go and walk away from it. But don't do that if it bothers you. If it bothers you, kind of say, okay, why is this bothering me?
Yeah.
But like, you do get to a stage where that's most of my reaction to lots of the stuff there now, like, you know.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't bother me at all. But we were chatting earlier on there about social media not being there when I started. Like, I don't know how I would have been that time.
Okay.
If there was stuff there.
Yeah, you don't know how you would have reacted.
I don't know. Yeah, I genuinely don't know how I'd feel. Like, if it's me now, I'd say, away you go. But I'm not the same person I was 25 years ago.
Yeah.
So you do have to feel for people who are starting out now. But you have to, the reality is where it is for me. Like, as in, this person thinks you're a gobshite or whatever. Like, you know, are you really a gobshite? Do you know what? I'm not. I'm actually kind of a decent enough person. Like,
yeah.
Or I'm certain, do you know what I mean? Hang on a second, you know, I'm actually a good person. Like, so this person is wrong. And then I think once you trash it out in your own head going, actually, no, they're wrong, you can move on then as well. Like, but if it does bother you, think about it and think of the reality and then move on from it. Don't just leave it hanging back there because it'll come back to get you.
When I was setting up this podcast, I was like, I really wanted it a place where people could come on and tell their own story in their own words. You know, you're not reading headlines, you're not reading it off social media, and just a safe place for people to just tell their own story.
Yeah.
So do you mind if we talk about your cancer diagnosis?
No bother, yeah.
Tell us, how did this even come about?
It's strange, right? Because there was a little, I suppose, what I thought was a pimple. Even. Right. I thought it was an ingrown hair.
Yeah.
Now, when you say cancer diagnosis, like, I was very, like, I wasn't going to talk about this in the beginning, but say maybe around 6 or 7 months ago, I got a call from a journalist to say, I heard you had a cancer diagnosis and would you talk about it? I said, look, I want to make things very, very clear. This wasn't any life-threatening cancer diagnosis or anything. It was sun damage, a small bit of skin cancer. And I said, I'll speak about it on the basis that, look, the message is, factor 50 all day long, whether it's a sunny day, a cloudy day or anything. But I didn't want to sensationalize it, but I didn't also want to throw it away because I know skin cancer can be very, very serious and in an extreme case can be fatal as well. Which, so I was kind of very, very conscious of how I wanted to speak about it. But it was, I thought it was an ingrown hair right there in my eyebrow. And so I was going to the doctor, and the doctor said, look, just get that checked, because it wasn't going away. And see, because I put makeup on every day in work, I was taking the makeup off, and I thought I was just agitating it. So that's why it wasn't clearing up. So this was going on for a few months, actually. So the doctor said, look, just get it checked. So I think the doctor kind of knew what it was, really. So, and she said straight away, she said, I can tell you that's a bit of skin cancer. So I was kind of like, what? I didn't expect. I thought, no, she was going to freeze it. Like, you can freeze this thing. I thought she was going to do it all in the one day. Like,
yeah.
I thought I was going to walk out of her office with just a bit of a cold thing there and a bit of a bandage. And she said, no, we'll have to take that out. So I said, well, is it serious? Well, she said, every cancer is serious. I said, well, that's fair enough. So that was probably March, maybe. And then
of this year or last year?
Last year. And then we came off the air probably the end of May on the Thursday. And I got a take cut out then on Friday. So basically it had gone into the muscle up here, so she had to cut in deeper in there. So there was three inside stitches and six on the outside, so there's a scar there. So she did a very good job in hiding it. And she said, look, the damage is done now, so you need to mind yourself. Like, so every day now, factor 50 in my face, my neck, and on the back of your hands. Don't forget the back of your hands as well, because even when you're driving, you need to be covered. Like, you need to be protected. So, and even if it's a cloudy day, people think it's just because it's cloudy, there's no sun there, no, these rays get in there. So I'd be advising people just factor 50 all the way.
Because you'd be out for a walk, like, you'd be out for walks out
all the
and
time.
Everything.
I'm somebody who was out all the time, like, you know.
And you never would have worn factor 50 or...
Never wore factor 50, but I was always going to put on, say, factor 15 and 20 on. And but yeah, that kind of frightened me, really. It's kind of one of those things where there's somebody sitting across from you, they're talking, you're going, geez, what's this now, you know? Didn't expect this. But she was a really, really lovely doctor.
Yeah.
And she said, are you worried? I said, well, you're after saying cancer. Like, so of course I'm worried. She said, don't you worry. She said, leave me do the worrying. So I was thinking, so there's one of us worrying here. So I said, look, what's the story? She said, look, we'll cut it out and that's it.
Okay.
So then I turned up for the, it was supposed to be a biopsy. And I was there saying, look, I'm kind of have to be on TV again in 2 weeks' time. So if she was going to take a biopsy, send the biopsy to get it tested, and if it was cancerous, we'd have to come back and take it out. So as she was going to cut, I said, look, what do you think it is? She said, well, I'm pretty sure it's this. So will I be coming back in 2 weeks' time to cut it out? Can we cut it all out now? She said, do you want to do that? Please do. So she took it all out. And then she called me back 6 weeks later and said, yeah, it was cancerous.
Okay, so she cut it out, all of it out, and then they done like a test on it then.
So I said, look, it's going to be coming out anyway. So I cut it all out, I said.
Okay.
So she cut it all out, and that was it. So it's weird, it's strange, like, and you're kind of going, but anyway, listen.
Yeah.
If you see anything, go to the doctor, get it checked, and get it done. And that's it, you move on then. She called me after that, look, it was what it was. I got the whole thing, that she cut a millimeter all around to make sure that she got everything. Go on with your life, she said. That's it. Wow. You're cancer free, off you go. But like, again, I try not to sensationalize it because other people with cancer, and we all know there's hardly a house in Ireland that hasn't knocked on the door. So this was the very, very mild form. But even that, get it checked. That's what I'd say. And factor 50.
Factor 50, yeah. For sure.
I was just going to leave it as in, get it done, because no one noticed anything because I was off the air, and the surgeon did a fantastic job.
Yes.
You'd have to come up really close to kind of even notice it. So, and then I don't know how this journalist in one of the Sunday papers heard it.
I was really sad though when I read that, if I'm being honest, as in when I read the fact that you weren't actually going to talk about this, but then somebody like invades your privacy and is like, can you
just
talk about
that's it? That's just part of it, but you have to turn it into something good then. And that something good is to get the message out to our factor 50.
Okay.
And I spoke about it on the basis that the person wouldn't sensationalise it. I wasn't on death's door or anything like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And I wanted to be very, very straight about that, and very, very, as in, this wasn't life-threatening at all.
Yeah.
But this happens, and there are skin cancers that can take people's lives if they don't mind themselves. So, yeah, this is very, very mild, but so I decided to do that interview on the basis of the message was get factor 50 on, folks.
I have to say, throughout this entire interview with you, I'm learning so much from you in the sense of, like, I feel like you really just meet things like head on.
Yeah.
You deal with things as they are. I feel like there's no dilly-dallying with you. Like, you're like, this is exactly what it is. This is what I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
You don't really, like, glamorize too much of your life.
Yeah.
And equally, you talk about the things that we should be talking about.
Yeah, well, life's for living too, like, so yeah. I think you can get a lot of time glamorizing things. And like I said, even with social media, you see lots of pictures of people and it's all this perfect thing and it's pure bull, like, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I just want to be happy in life and get on with life. I don't want to, there's no need to be telling everybody about it. People get certain things from that. It just doesn't do it for me. I want to, like, say, for example, I was having dinner with friends one night. Oh, you're going to take a picture? I said, no, I'm going to eat it. I'm actually going to eat the flipping thing, like, you know. So other people get enjoyment out of putting up stuff. I want to eat the steak that I've been waiting for.
I don't want to be taking
pictures. No, I don't want to be taking pictures. And then, but I do then sometimes, because sometimes I feel like I have to. And then I say, ah, fuck this.
Yeah, no, it's fair enough.
Yeah.
Can we go back to your beautiful wife?
Yes.
So you met her at the Rose of Tralee, but you were not the presenter at the time. Okay, so I want to know. Now, be real with me now.
Okay,
you've been real so far, so let's keep going with that. Were you looking at her going, I'm going to put her through now because she's fabulous?
No, no.
Die.
No, because this she was at a stage where, like, say, it was going to be a winner. There's going to be one winner and there's going to be 31 who didn't. Okay.
So where was it?
This was at the International Rose. This is down in Tralee.
In Tralee.
She was on TV and everything with Ray and everything.
Okay.
So I was the judging panel and the Aoife Kelly won the Rose Tralee that year, but I did say that she was a cracker.
Okay, what attracted you to her first? Like, what was it?
Well, the first thing was because she was good looking, like.
Yeah, of course.
Because
it's
the first thing I saw, but even before she opened, I said, well, Jesus, this is very good looking. So she had a red dress on and she was kind of tanned as well. So I remember that. I actually remember her walking into the room. So I can still remember that.
So there was instant chemistry, would you say?
No. See, this is the thing. Like, so she was in the Rose of Tralee. And so I'd probably met her once or twice, obviously, in the kind of interview thing. And then kind of once or twice. As in, hello, how are you doing? How are you getting on? Are you enjoying everything? So it was only after that then, about a year after that.
Oh.
Even more before we came kind of friends. Just we were friends on Facebook, as lots of people are, and you're sending hello, how are you doing messages.
You're poking her.
It was a long time after before I poked her. It was 2 years after that again before I poked her properly. And we were friends for a long time, and then I was doing a show in America in 2010, which is 2 years after that.
Okay.
And we were coming through New York, so I said, look, do you want to meet
coincidentally
up?
Coincidentally.
Well, the road we were on was coming through New York. So that was the first time we met up.
Okay.
And then I finished that trip in Miami, down the Keys in Florida, and I was supposed to go home, and I flew up to New York
To meet Rita?
Yeah, she's in New Jersey, but she's only over the river. So I flew up to New Jersey.
Yeah.
And I stayed there for about 5 or 6 days. And then I went home. And then I came back over. I went back over again around two weeks later for the weekend.
Yeah.
I went back over. So that was around May, June.
Right.
So we were kind of over and back for the summer to each other. And then she moved over in September that year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so you were doing long distance for a while then?
For a few months. And then she moved over, and then she'd go back for maybe a month or maybe a few weeks at a time, then working with her parents again, and then back over again. But yeah, so she moved over in September that year, in 2010.
So how come she came to you and you didn't go over to her? Because like you have an American passport.
I do, yeah. But that was the same time as I left TG Cahir as well, that I went to RT. So I'd moved to Dublin as well.
Okay.
So a lot of things happened that around that in those few months.
So there was a lot of change then for you at that time. A lot of change,
yeah. That, like, say, for example, if you go back to even the April of 2010, I was a full-time staff in TG Cahir and I wasn't going out with anyone. And then, say, that September, I'd left a full-time job, moved to RTE, and started going out with somebody who I started living with in September.
You started living with her straight away?
Yeah, when she moved over here, yeah. So lots actually, it's actually funny when you say it like that, because I never even thought about it like that. So lots actually changed in those few months.
But
we really had been friends for a long time before that. Like, we'd been, like, say, even for the year before that, we went from messaging each other once a day, or say once a month, right? That went to once a week, and then that went to once a day. Now, this is over a space of 8 or 9 months.
Yeah.
And then it went to messaging each other 20 times a day. And then we met each other once or twice. And then I suppose it's when we would do that trip in America that's when we decided to, okay.
And did you know? I know this is such a
I think we knew from then on
that you wanted to be with her.
That was it, because we were friends, we were really good friends, I think, before anything happened. And I think that was a really, really good basis for the relationship, which that never probably happened to me before.
Okay.
Where you started going out with somebody and then you get to know somebody. Do you know what I mean? As opposed to knowing somebody really well and going out with them.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably the first time maybe that had happened.
Okay.
Probably. So maybe that was one of the big differences. So a year after, we were going out for a full year, really living here. So then we got engaged.
Yeah.
So
Kelly, how did you propose?
Oh, well, we went to a place called Weehawken, which is in New Jersey, which looks across at the New York skyline.
Oh, fab.
So it was the first place I told her I loved her. So I brought her back there and went down on one knee.
Oh, that's so lovely.
Yeah, romance. There you have it.
That is so lovely.
Yeah, picked the ring myself.
Did you?
Yeah, no.
A token ring or the actual ring? Excuse you, don't do tokens. Excuse me.
The real deal.
Really?
No, I had an idea what she liked, all right, yeah.
Oh, like, had you discussed it or what?
We were talking about, kind of in a very kind of...
Like back way.
Like, so I kind of knew what you wanted, all right.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's so nice that you did that.
Yeah, got engaged a year, after going out for a year, then we got engaged, and the following summer we got married.
Where'd you get married?
Down in Dingle and then into Tralee then for the...
Of course.
Back into Tralee, back to the scene of the crime.
Oh my God.
So yeah, so that's it then. And then... That was 2012. 2 years later, then Ogie lands. So okay. He's 10 now this year. So like, he's just the love of my life, that guy. He's just unbelievable. Like, yeah.
So how has being a father then changed?
It changes you in a great way, because as we were chatting about that, just living in the moment. So sometimes you can go to work and you can take things home with you and you can have all this stuff rattling around in your head. But when I found, when I got home to him, that I'd lying next to him in the bench, it was just the two of us. Like,
yeah.
You know. I'd be going in just say goodnight. So you wouldn't care about anything else in the world.
No.
And that's great. It's just a great place to be, you know?
Yeah, he's so so cute, isn't he?
Sure, listen, he's a happy-go-lucky young fella, and that's all you want. And when you see him with his buddies there, having the crack and reacting. So that's all you want. I don't really do a whole lot of work at the weekends anymore, because I want to be at home. And I want to doss around the place too.
Yeah, you're just at a different stage in your life than you would have been.
Just at a different stage where you just kind of like, I try to go for a few pints with the friends when I can. I've been out for a few weeks. Like maybe the week after next, I might go out.
Yeah.
And just to try to get that balance, right? You won't always get the balance, because you have other people, you have other friends in who will call you to come on their podcast, right? And then you'd have to kind of care about a morning of your time off to come to do a podcast with a friend of yours, Sarah. Even though you might have a great plan, sometimes you have to put your plans aside.
Yeah,
you know.
for your best pal.
Yeah.
So then, Di, what is a highlight of your career? I know you probably have many, but
yeah,
a couple of them.
There are loads. Like, I suppose lots of the roles of Tralee's were always good fun. Like when things go wrong was always a good fun for me. Like, like in the beginning, like something goes wrong, you're going, Jesus. But when something goes wrong now, like you're just laughing. Like, because I remember when I was on the stage of one of the roses, and this, I was chatting away to her. Next second, I said, why is there a birthday cake coming out on the stage with 20 something candles on it, you know? So, happy birthday, and the whole place singing it anyway. So to make a long story short, it wasn't even her birthday, but she went with it. I said, happy birthday. Oh, thanks very much. I'll have a cake here for you. We all sang happy birthday. So I said, and after, I said, I didn't know it was your birthday. She said, it wasn't. I said, where did the cake come out of? Somebody got it wrong. He said, lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so some things like that. Like, there's other few weird things. Like, I was asked to be in a movie then with Snoop Dogg.
Oh, and, yeah.
And Keanu Reeves.
So what do you mean you were asked to be in a movie with him?
So I was in a movie with Snoop Madra. Yeah, Snoop Dogg and Keanu Reeves.
What?
Yeah.
When was this? Is this like an unfiltered exclusive?
People have seen the movie. Like,
say yes.
Yes. It's the first time I've spoken about it on a podcast called Unfiltered. And I was in the SpongeBob SquarePants movie.
I knew that.
Yeah.
Okay.
With Snoop Dogg was in it as well.
No.
Yeah.
Wait, so did you get to meet him?
No, I was the Irish language. I was King Poseidon in the SpongeBob SquarePants movie that I recorded in my own home.
Oh, I actually remember you telling me about this. This was during lockdown,
right?
This was
during lockdown, yeah. So there was a producer in London. There was somebody else in County Down. There was somebody else in Hollywood. And I was in Galway doing King Poseidon, who was kind of a very camp, flamboyant king.
Right.
With a West Kerry accent. So that was very, very interesting. So I had Ogie in the room with me when I was doing some of the screens, because you could see all the SpongeBob SquarePants things up on the screen as well, because I had to hit the marks for the lip syncing of the cartoon. So I was in a movie with Snoop Madra and Keanu Reeves and
that
SpongeBob SquarePants.
So funny.
Yeah, so it was good crack, like, yeah.
That is hilarious. So any other like random facts?
Well,
like
I suppose years ago I used to sing songs, and then a neighbour of mine who passed away, said Seamus Bailey, called me up and he said, do you want to sing with the Chieftains? And I said, yeah, we'll sing with the Chieftains. So Seamus, myself, and a man called Lawrence Courtney, the Chieftains were recording an album called Water from the Well. And they were going around to different parts of Ireland singing with different people. So they came as far as Dingle. So they sang with Seamus, Lawrence and myself on Pucker Bwille. And that, they recorded it as well for TV. So for years, I had friends of mine in America, Canada, Finland, Japan on St. Patrick's Day sending me messages, I'm watching you here on TV in Japan. Because they sent that everywhere. And that album then went on to be nominated for a Grammy.
So Di O'Shea has been nominated for a Grammy.
Well, I sang a few verses of a song on an album that was nominated for a Grammy.
Same thing, yeah.
So there are kind of some weird facts. Like some real fun, random things that I got to do down through the years as well. Like, so
I love that.
Yeah.
That's class. And then I'm so lucky to have you on this podcast. Like, genuinely, I really am. Like, people have been watching you for over 25 years on their screen in their living room, feeling like they were your best pal. And I'm lucky enough to call you my pal.
But listen, come here, we know each other for a long time.
Yeah.
I remember you brought me down during around Mullingar during the Fla as well.
Yeah.
And I thought there were people coming up to see me, but they were coming to see you.
That was great.
Great fun.
Will you stop? I had we were getting selfies and everything, and I had like women like elbowing me out of the way to get in to get a photo with.
It was good fun, and you know, Mullingar was made for the Fla. Like, it was like there was a great buzz around the place.
Right. Okay.
But I did land into a few pubs already. I can't remember them.
In Mullingar.
Yeah.
Right. Which were your favourites? Come on now.
Is there a Cannon something?
Canton Casey's.
Thank you. That's the one. And there was another few up the street.
The Greville.
The Greville. Yeah, I was in the Greville Arms.
Well, Di, what do you want to be remembered for regarding your career?
Oh, regarding my career? I don't know. In life, as a good dad.
Yeah.
That would be... God, I don't know, Sarah. That's a good question. What do I be remembered? I don't know. It's an interesting one, to be remembered for something. I don't know. Just a fellow who was there in the afternoon keeping you company.
Yeah.
Something like that. Like, I'd be happy, like, if people say, oh, my grandmother and mother used to watch that lad. He was a nice old lad, that fella. Whatever happened to him?
Yeah. Do you know what, though? I always think people will always remember you for how you made them feel. And I definitely think you made people feel really good throughout your
that's
career.
That's very kind.
Yeah, for
that's
sure.
Very kind.
So I'm actually going to take this opportunity then to just, I think, to thank you on behalf of everybody in Ireland, really, for just making great TV and, yeah, just making us laugh. Probably cry along the way as well, and just been for being an unbelievable presenter. I absolutely idolize you for what you do, and yeah, I really
thanks,
look
Sarah.
Up to you for everything you do. Yeah,
thanks definitely. Very much. You make me emotional now.
No, but genuinely,
thank you
so much.
Well, it's what we do every day. We sit down. We are in people's sitting rooms for most of the year for over 2 hours. We keep people company. People dip in and dip out of the show. People stay for the whole thing. Some people don't watch it at all, and that's fine. And we're there, and we enjoy it. We try to bring a bit of lightheartedness into people's homes. When you look what's happening in the world at the moment, it can be a very, very sad place. So we try to create a place where people can come and watch the show and have a bit of fun, have a bit of a laugh, and most of all, stay true to who we are as Irish people.